Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It was the death of Trayvon Martin in 2012 that sparked the Black Lives Matter movement a year later in 2013. Some 5 years of civil disobedience for the movement has been an education for activists. During this Black History Month, the Black Lives Matter movement has moved into classrooms of D.C. and Prince George's County schools, but how specifically? We're talking about that tonight. My guests are Brian Trueblood. He is a teacher and representative of the Prince George's County Teachers Union. Dr. Greg Carr, chair of the Afro-American Studies Department here at Howard University. And a little bit later, we're going to be talking to an official from Teaching for Change. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Brian Trueblood, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And Dr. Carr, always a pleasure to have you on deck with us.
Pleasure's mine, Harold. Always glad to be in your classroom, brother.
Brian, let's first talk about this. This is called a Black Lives Matter Week of Action. What does that mean?
What we were able to accomplish is to be able to observe Black Lives Matter and the some of the concerns that Black Lives Matter address for a week. So we started this Monday the 5th, and then we are ending the week tomorrow on the 9th.
Mm-hmm. Are you teaching it in your classroom?
Yes, and with the resolution being passed by our school district, all educators have the opportunity to incorporate some aspect of Black Lives Matter into their curriculum this week. That is like the biggest gain from it being accepted by the school board. Mm-hmm. So that is a luxury. So yes, I am covering it within my classroom, and other educators have the opportunity to also do the same thing.
What do you teach, and how are you incorporating it into the class?
So I teach phys ed, so physical education, and then I also teach a College Summit class, where I'm the advisor over that. And how I've been able to kind of incorporate it into the classroom and into the gym is to just allow individuals to kind of first give some of their thoughts and concerns about what Black Lives Matter means to them. And then we just kind of carry the conversation based off of the students' interest. So it's really student-led, which emphasizes more the importance of it, because a lot of the topics are really driven by the students within my classroom. And I kind of ask, I'll pose a question, and they really kind of dictate the ending narrative of that topic.
Dr. Carr, as chair of Afro-American Studies here, do you see the Black Lives Matter movement education piece? Is that history? Or is it current events, or is it a blend? The movement is really only 5 years old.
I think you say it well, Harold. It's a blend. I mean, listen to the brother and listen to what would be taught at the K-12 level. And we know that this is a week that's being observed all over the country in many places. Philadelphia, where I lived for 17 years, a number of the schools. And later on, you're going to be hearing from Teach for Change. They've done a lot of work around this. You know, it's about the guiding principles of Black Lives Matter as they've emerged: diversity, restorative justice, globalism, queer affirming, unapologetically Black, and the other principles. So it's giving young people a chance to think through what their lives mean in real time and having a space to work that through and connect it to what they're learning. So it is in terms of contemporary events, it's very relevant. But it's also an opportunity, and it's also an opportunity to link that to previous generations of struggle. Here at Howard, for example, this afternoon, brother Sam Achua of the Chicago Bears came to class, came to our hip hop class, accompanied by, get this, the owner of the Bears. George McCloskey was in town.
Wow.
This white dude, the owner of the Bears, going all the way back to George Halas, is sitting with Sam Achua, who is on his roster and the NFL player rep, talking about black lives in Chicago. That was incredibly relevant to these young people. And it was incredibly relevant for Achua to be able to talk about Colin Kaepernick. Man, I heard him talk about Kaepernick in front of the guy who signs his paychecks. At the K-12 level, you're talking about young people who don't get an opportunity to talk about the reality of their lives. And you're talking about having them do it with teachers who are now bringing that into the classroom. It makes education relevant in a way that really there's no substitute for in this crucial moment in our history.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the Black Lives Matter movement as education, history, or current events. It is in the Prince George's County schools this week as a as an opportunity to observe a week of action. So, Brian, what's the homework? I say that kind of tongue in cheek, but just like any other topic, math or science, English or Spanish, whatever, there's homework. So what do you assign the students?
Right. That's a great question. And I'm glad that you asked that question. The homework is for them to identify what it is that they're passionate about, their concerns, and then kind of delve more into that, try to figure out what was the root of these actions being implemented in the first place, and then what actions can we do now to try to rectify some of those issues or challenges or concerns that we are dealing with now. So I try to always encourage the students to not just rely on the information that I share with them, but use that as a tool to lead them to find more information that is relevant to the topic or issue at hand.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the Black Lives Matter movement as education, history, or current events. What do you think about that? What would the issue be for your children if they were to come home and say, hey, mom, dad, guess what we're studying in school? How do you feel about it? Do you think it is appropriate? Do you think it is a grand learning experience? Give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Another question for you, Brian. Where do you teach?
I teach in Prince George's County,
okay,
Central
you,
High School.
So as we know, Prince George's County, a predominantly black county, but it is also extremely diverse. Do you have students that are not black in your class?
Yes, yes. My building has a huge Esau community. English isn't their first language, as Esau students. Mm-hmm. And our first action of observing was a blackout where all individuals had the opportunity, students, teachers, administration, had the opportunity to dress in all black, just in solidarity of acknowledging some of the injustices. And like you said, we do have a large population of African-American or black students that identify as black because there's 61% of our the students within the county are African-American or identify as black. But I can assure you that more than 61% of the students were dressed in all black to just express their concerns and how connected we are regarding this one issue.
Mm-hmm. Let me go to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Aaron calling from D.C. Aaron, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, my pleasure. Thank you for having this important conversation.
Sure.
Good evening. My name is Aaron Jenkins. I'm a local educator. I was interested to hear Dr. Carr and the gentleman from the PG County School discuss the possible incorporation of Black Youth Project 100 or some of the local activists that have been a part of the Black Lives Matter movement, and if there's been any discussion or interaction with them either on the Howard University campus or discussion into bringing them into the classroom. I think the reason I ask is that when we think of history, we often think of history as, you know, primary sources of people who lived long ago. What's so rich and vital with this movement is that these persons are still living, still organizing now. So I wonder if there's any engagement or any incorporation to bring some of the local activists who carried that banner here and to bring them into the classroom, either at the K-12 level or the collegiate level.
Before I let Dr. Carr start off, where did you go to college?
I attended Williams College in Northwest Massachusetts, born and raised in Washington, D.C., went to public school my entire life.
Okay. Dr. Carr?
Yeah, no, well, shout out to Williams College. I know several Howard, famous Howard faculty went to school there as well. Yeah, BYP 100, to the best of my knowledge, there are some Howard University students, particularly organized around AG Resist, Kwame Ture Society, Asada Shakur Society, who have been connected with them. And certainly we welcome that dialogue. In fact, I'll check with those young people to see how they specifically have reached out to them. I know several have deep Howard ties. That having been said, I think it's important to have our classrooms open to that dialogue and to connect that dialogue to previous generations. I think one of the things that I see in Black Lives Matter emerge generally as a concept is that there sometimes is we could work, I think, a little bit better to deliberately integrate this youth movement into the longer arc of Black and brown and oppressed movements in America. And I know that it's a global movement as well. Finally, I'll say this. Last semester, I had a chance to bring in a young sister who, from South Africa, who happened to be in D.C. to discuss the Fees Must Fall movement in South Africa, which is, you know, an incredible youth-led movement there to deal with questions of structural inequality in education, employment, and what it really allowed us to do is see how our local struggles are part of a global wave of resistance. So, and I'm absolutely going to follow up on that and see how BYP 100 has been involved on campus and see how we can get them more deeply integrated.
Aaron, I need you to hang on because I want Brian to also chime in, but I've got to take a break. And we want to hear more from our listeners about it. What do you think about the Black Lives Matter movement as an educational movement in our public school system? Who needs to know? Are we preaching to the choir? What do you think? Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Don't hang up. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation in just a few seconds. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. During this Black History Month, the Black Lives Matter movement has moved into the classrooms of D.C. and Prince George's County schools. But how has it done that specifically, and what does it mean? We're talking about it tonight. My guests are Brian Trueblood, a teacher and representative of the Prince George's County's Teachers Association. Also, Dr. Greg Carr, chair of the Afro-American Studies Department here at Howard University. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before the break, we were finishing up a question from Aaron calling from D.C. Brian, your thoughts about Aaron's question. Brian, can you hear me? Brian, are you there?
I am here. How you doing?
You know what, Brian? Thank you, Brian. Brian just, boy, I tell you, live radio, you just can't. Brian, put those headphones on. He just walked in and
good
sat down.
You, brother.
Okay, good. Brian, thank you so much
nice
coming in. There's your microphone. Let's get to it. I'm sure you heard Aaron's question from the previous, before the break, did you?
Yeah, I heard part of it.
Yeah, so
BYP 100 and local folks, how you
and local participation in the educational process. Yeah.
Oh, so of course, I haven't had an opportunity to establish some of those relationships. Me being a transplant, I'm originally from Florida, so trying to establish those networks, pulls out those relationships, I think is very beneficial. So that's part of why I'm here now, mm-hmm. To kind of establish that. Rapport with individuals that are already doing these things within our area so that I could be able to give them an opportunity to kind of share some of the initiatives that they're working towards within our area, within our district, and just really kind of incite students to really be passionate about what it is that they really want to see change in, and then know how to move in that manner. Because a lot of times our kids don't have anyone to emulate, right, that are doing things that are for these causes. So if I can put someone in front of them outside of me, because they see me
every day.
So, you know, it's almost like parents and their child. Like a parent to constantly tell their child something, the kid's like, all right, whatever. Then, but when the coach comes in and says the same thing, the kid's like, oh, did you? You know, my coach taught me this.
Right. So just like you were talking earlier today about the owner of the Bears.
That's right.
And so certainly, yeah, as a concept, it seems like a great idea. Aaron, thank you so much for adding to this conversation. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the Black Lives Matter movement as education, whether it's history or current events during this Black History Month. Let's go to Timothy. Timothy calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling, Timothy. What's on your mind?
Oh, thank you for an awesome program, and I'm really enjoying this. I'm just leaving L.A. Fitness, the gym here, and I tuned into your radio station. And on WHUR. So let me tell you, I am truly, truly proud of the Black Lives Matter movement.
Oh, wow. We lost him. Wow. Give us a call back, Timothy, if you can. I would appreciate it. And we will wait on your phone call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Now, here's something that did occur to me, and this was the piece that I was trying to get to with Brian before. The Black Lives Matter movement is about Black people. That is how it started. When you talk about change, particularly in this current political climate, is the Black Lives Matter movement as an educational piece just for Black folks? Should it not be for other folks? And I don't mean necessarily folks of color, white people. Don't they need to understand what is and has happened?
Yes, I think that's everybody's task to understand some of the, not some of them, some of them, but at least for them to take and a piece of what people of color, Black people, have to face or deal with in the past few years. So I think it should be everyone's duty to understand why Black Lives Matter movement even exists. So I've even had students kind of ask the question or pose the comment of, oh, well, how come they didn't say all lives matter? And I always give the example of, let's say, think of your house on fire, right? So we call the fire department, and your house is within a neighborhood of all houses. But when they come, they're only here to put out the fire. So we would think they were crazy if they started spraying water on all the houses before they got to my house because it was on fire.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to explain it to them that Black Lives Matter isn't saying that other lives don't matter. It's just these lives right now are on fire. And we're trying to bring it to your attention so we can start putting out some of these fires that are related to the Black lives.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's a constant thing that is going on within this country, that we're seeing these actions occurring, but we're not really putting out the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no justification or no follow through within the judicial system, right? Because we understand that it's illegal to commit a crime as a murder, right? Or harassing individuals. But then where are the repercussions?
Mm-hmm.
What's happening? What's the follow-up behind that?
Mm-hmm.
So I try to stress to my students that it's not a racial thing. It's identifying an issue and then trying to find a solution to rectify those issues that are occurring, which is the Black lives being lost or Black lives being harassed.
Let me go to our next guest, Fayette Colon. She is the coordinator of teacher engagement and professional development with Teaching for Change. Fayette, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Yes, of course. Thank you for having me.
Talk to me about Teaching for Change and how this Black Lives Matter week of action was coordinated.
So I was recently hired at Teaching for Change to coordinate and manage the D.C. Area Educators for Social Justice, which is a network that seeks to build a community of social justice educators in the D.C. area, akin to NICOR in New York City and other organizations, other similar organizations in the nation. And I was approached by an educator, Dr. Denisha Jones from Trinity University. She's a professor there, and she told me about joining a national call for Black Lives Matter Week of Action in schools. And so I joined the national call and became really interested in bringing this to D.C. because it seemed like something that needed to happen in D.C. I mean, it is our nation's capital. Coincidentally enough, some of the educators who are involved with Rethinking Schools, which is one of the organizations that we work with on the Zen Education Project, was involved in the Black Lives Matter Week of Action in Schools campaign that happened last year in Seattle. And so I became really involved in trying to create a movement here in D.C. And educators in Seattle and Philadelphia and Rochester who had originally began this Black Lives Matter Week of Action campaign last year wanted to create a national platform and began to contact people in cities throughout the nation to create momentum around building a national campaign for Black Lives Matter.
So was there any pushback when you and others for Teaching for Change started to move this kind of information, this movement, if I may, into the school system? Because certainly just, you know, Black Lives Matter is not always supported by everyone.
We have been lucky in that we haven't received a lot of pushback. In fact, the Washington Teachers Union is in full support and an endorser of the Week of Action. The DCPS Secondary Literacy Team has endorsed the Week of Action. We haven't gotten the chancellor to vocally endorse the Week of Action, but we haven't received any pushback from educators or schools. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not pushback. I know of some individual educators who were told by their administration that they were not allowed to teach Black Lives Matter.
Did they say why?
And curriculum.
Did they say why?
I didn't speak to the educator who had shared this with me. She had asked for us not to include her school's name on the list of endorsing. We have a list of schools. It's over 100 schools. Not that the 100 schools have endorsed the Week of Action. Educators in over 100 schools have endorsed the Week of Action. And so she was an educator who endorsed the Week of Action, signed up to participate, and asked for her school to be removed because her school has said you cannot participate in this Week of Action. But I haven't heard specifically reasons why, but I know some pushback has been the All Lives Matter argument that some people are espousing.
Brian, you were nodding your head when she was talking about that pushback. Have you seen some concern about the teaching of this issue as opposed to the support?
Yeah, I think with any kind of change, you know, there's going to be individuals that are going to be a little reluctant.
What did they say?
More so just questions of why do I feel that this is important that our students learn this information, or why is it that we need to bring this into classrooms, or how is this going to affect students that aren't Black?
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me it's an easy answer. Like, I mean, we teach history, right? And all of these actions that occurred are history.
Yeah.
So I don't know why an individual's complexion has to be a reason why is not associated with history.
Which goes to, Dr. Carr, which goes to my, the question that I was asking earlier, is a Black Lives Matter, you know, curriculum, even if it's just for a week, it's not just for Black folks.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm so glad to hear Fayette on the line, particularly since y'all just wrapped up at Edmund Burke a minute ago, huh?
Yes, we did.
Yes.
We had an inter-school seminar on Black Lives Matter.
And of course, it was were there only Black people there?
No, actually, I would say the crowd was very mixed. In the room that I was in, which was on the topic was legalization of marijuana, when we entered the space where the students were, because we had today's intergenerational Black families and Black villages, that's the principle that's being honored. And so adults were in one room to talk about a specific issue and students were in another, and then we joined the students. And I'd say the room that I was in was predominantly white with some students of color, but definitely the white students were really engaged in this conversation and wanted to have this conversation.
And
had thoughtful things to say.
Well, and that's one of the things I've always appreciated about Teaching for Change, Harold, that they've always been a multiracial, intergenerational coalition of practitioners. So, you know, like we're listening, the classroom is where this activity takes place. And think about this, and I can understand why there could be somebody maybe listening and said, I'm very upset. You were talking about the legalization of marijuana. Who do you think this impacts? And so, you know, and so to even have that kind of conversation in an elite K-12 institution like Edmund Burke, but to have people representing every social class, every racial background, discussing something that affects certainly Black and brown people disproportionately, but ultimately affects every human being in this society, is to talk about the burden that Black Lives Matter has taken up the responsibility of lifting, which is the ultimate lifting of all of our lives and improvement of all our lives.
I need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Gerald calling from Capitol Heights. We're going to talk to Baron calling from Virginia. We're talking about Black Lives Matter, the movement during this Black History Month as it moves into classrooms, part of education. We'll be back in just a moment. 202-319-7810,
202-319. That's fine.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about the Black Lives Matter movement as it moves into the classrooms of locally D.C. and Prince George's County schools. How is it done? Why is it done? And the significance of it during this Black History Month. Let me go back to the phone line. Gerald, thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
How you doing?
Doing just fine. Go right ahead.
All right, my name is Gerald.
Gerald. Go right ahead. Sorry about that.
It's all good. Yeah, I would like to say that I believe it's very important that we incorporate this Black Lives Matter movement into the school systems, just because all these years it hasn't been there, but it is indeed American history. So for us to say we're teaching history, complete, full, honest history to the youth, we shouldn't exclude anything, especially something that is built up this country on our backs as Black people. So I would say I definitely feel that it's necessary to be incorporated into the school systems, and I love what's going on in Prince George County as well as other counties, cities, states around the country as far as the small steps, which are actually big leaps in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
Just the fact that we are able to come together and peacefully protest, not necessarily having to hurt anyone in the process, just getting our points out there, letting our voices be heard.
Okay.
So that's what I would like to say.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Baron calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Baron. What's on your mind?
Hi, good evening. How are you?
Doing just fine. Go right ahead.
Thank you. I have two things. One is just to come in to say how important the Black Lives Matter movement is. You know, I usually think that the reason people protest should be looked at as opposed to the protesters themselves. I think the authorities that be needs to be more involved in the reason why the Black Lives Matter movement began, as opposed to just looking at the reason that they're protesting. And I think it's not even important, the fact that it says Black Lives Matter. More, what is important is the reason behind it. you know, because people latch onto Black Lives Matter and then they say White Lives Matter too and stuff like that, and then it brings all confusion as to the actual meaning or reason behind the protesting. So, again, my point is people should look, the government and the authorities that be should look at the reason behind the protesting and not just the protesters themselves, because it's more of a socioeconomic issue as opposed to just a Black issue.
Mm. Okay. Baron, thank you so much. You had another point. Go ahead.
I had a clarification also. When he asked the question, I believe that was for Brian, earlier on a few minutes ago, he responded. The question was if his school or I think his classroom was made up of Black people, African Americans only.
Mm-hmm.
And his response was kind of misleading in my opinion, because he responded with a mixture of race and ethnicity. He used Esau students as to reflect the fact that they may not be Black per se. And I think that's a kind of misleading issue, because personally, English is not my first language, but I'm a Black person. And I think I stand completely for Black Lives Matter as well. I don't see any difference between me and a born African-American. And so I think the ethnicity shouldn't be confused with the color of a skin. I think it's basically... one.
Well, let me let Brian address that. Brian, go right ahead.
Yeah. So, thank you for giving that input, and you are totally right. But the reason why I mentioned that, because we do have individuals that are the same hue as I am, but they do not identify themselves as being Black. So, I know when you come into the States, individuals that have the same hue as me may be identified as Black amongst individuals that are not Black, but within those other communities, from my experiences just living and interacting with my students, you know, I have a Dominican student that does not identify as being Black, but she may look like she's Black to non-Black people. Or I may have an African student that does not identify as Black. Right. But they, to someone that is not Black, they may assume that they're Black. So I understand what you're saying, and you're right. And I think all of those individuals may deal with the same issue, but that doesn't mean that they identify as being Black.
And not to put too fine a point on it, but the very foundation of, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement has to do with Black people specifically, but people of color, and having unfortunate encounters with law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And so one could argue that you may not consider yourself Black today,
right. Mm-hmm.
But the day after you have uncomfortable or unhealthy interaction with law enforcement, you may have to reconsider how you see yourself based on, you know, the outcome of that unfortunate interaction. But Baron, thank you so much for sharing that with me. Fayette, I did want to ask you, you mentioned Seattle, and you're in New York now, is that correct?
No, I'm in D.C., but I am originally from
You are you're in D.C. because one of the things that I was talking about earlier was, you know, when you talk about the, you know, the diversity of this event that you just finished. And I think I would argue that in D.C. or in New York, for example, not too hard to get a progressive, curious, diverse audience. But when you're talking about a place like Overland Park, Kansas, for example, or Columbus, Ohio, or places like that, it may be a little more difficult. And so with that said, when you spoke about places like Seattle, was the approach different? Was the information different? Or was it all the same?
So the inception of the Black Lives Matter Week of Action campaign in schools really started in a school, John Muir Elementary School, an educator, right after the incident and the police killing of Philando Castile. And the school had been doing a lot of race and equity work, and so the educator wanted to have a day of action talking about issues of racial equity with the students in the school, and educators in the school had were going to show their support by wearing Black Lives Matter t-shirts. And so I guess to give context, the school had been going through a lot of training on race and equity work. So the school itself was equipped to have these conversations, and they were ready to really engage in strong discussions with each other and their students.
Mm-hmm.
And they received a lot of backlash. They even received a bomb threat, and the school, with that, the teachers wore their shirts. And when the students were entering the building, the teachers were in the front and, giving students high fives as they came in, it was described to me. And so out of that, the educators started a campaign to try and support a Black Lives Matter Week of Action in schools,
mm-hmm.
And get the school board to support it, and this year they've made a lot of great strides. I'm sorry, I forgot your original question. I feel like I'm detracting.
You answered it perfectly. Answered it perfectly, because, and the reason I mentioned that is because, having traveled to Seattle, Seattle is no chocolate city. And so, the Black population in Seattle, while I'm sure it has changed since I've been there, but when I was there last, it was 12%. And so, I was just curious to see what kind of reception this kind of week of action, this movement, received. Let me go back to the phone lines. Timothy, you made it back, and I'm so glad. Go right ahead. What's on your mind?
Thank you so very much. I don't know what happened, but thank you for reengaging me.
Sure.
I really want to get this point out, and I really feel in my heart, when I saw the Black Lives Matter rise up, first come out number one, took on the issues that a lot of us, and I'm 56 years old. I worked in law enforcement for about 21 years. Never, ever in my life have I ever shot a man in the back, handcuffed.
Come on, brother.
Never, mm-hmm. ever have I choked a man to death and couldn't breathe. My whole point in saying that with that vigor is that there's a lot of cowards in the police department. And here in Baltimore, Maryland, we're going through some crooked cops who've been on the take robbing drug dealers and taking their money. You guys aware of that?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So that being said, if the cowardly cops would stand up and say, "Oh, wait a second, these guys who are shooting people in the back, choking people to death, do not represent the good police officers who are out there doing their job to protect and serve, but they sit on their hands in fear."
Mm-hmm.
So here's my, I want to give kudos to the Black Lives Matter, because here's what it's done. Listen, these young men and women are educated college graduate students who are willing to put their bodies, their careers, when they could be doing something else like teaching law, going back to work, or whatever, they're actually out there putting their souls, their bodies on the line for our children.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, what I think what they did, the Black Lives Matter opened up the conscience of this country, man, to, like, even, I'm from the era of the civil rights movement.
Yeah. And Timothy, I'm going to have to stop you because I'm running out of time. But I think that you put a fine point on it. And I appreciate that you are able to speak not only, from the perspective of a Black man, but also a member of law enforcement. And certainly we do need more officers who are not just standing up, but also speaking up. And so thank you so much. I appreciate your contribution to this conversation. Real quick, Dr. Carr, this has been a week of action. Just like people often say about Black history, it's only, 1 month of the year. Isn't it time for this to stop being just 1 week of Black History Month?
The beautiful thing about it is that it has stopped. Carter Woodson said February should be the short period of time we celebrate what we've done the rest of the year.
Hmm.
And what we see, we have an embarrassment of riches here in the DMV with Teaching for Change and other organizations. To hear Brother Bryant tell me what's going on, we look at the same thing in Baltimore. Like I said, I know a lot of young people in Philadelphia who are doing work. Seattle, you mentioned it, is doing work as well. It's all over the country. And so, no, I think the cat's out the bag now, walking around freely. Looks like it's a black cat, too, bro.
I think that's a good way to end this conversation. Brian Trueblood, Dr. Greg Carr, Fayette Cologne, thank you so much for talking to us. And good luck to all of you as we move forward with Black Lives Matter. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, February 8th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.